Hello, and welcome to the 2020 VPR Vermont PBS debate series. Ahead of Vermont's August 11th state primary, we're bringing you debates with the candidates for Vermont's top two offices. On Tuesday, we heard from the Republican candidates for lieutenant governor. Today, we'll hear from the Democrats. I'm Jane Lindholm. Joining me for the debate today via Zoom are four candidates vying for the open seat that will be vacated by David Zuckerman, who's running for governor. The candidates joining us today are Tim Ash, Molly Gray, Debbie Ingram, and Brenda Siegel. Welcome to all four of you. Thank you very much for being with us today. To give you a sense of what this hour is going to be like, here's the format for the debate. In the first section, I'll ask the candidates a question. They'll have 45 seconds to respond. In the second section, segments, candidates will have an opportunity to ask questions directly of one another. And in the third section, we'll post questions from our viewers and listeners. If we have time, we'll throw in a few lightning round questions with very brief responses. And at the end, each candidate will have 1 minute to offer an answer to a closing question. So let's get started. You'll each have 45 seconds to respond to these questions, and I may ask a brief clarifying follow-up. Tim Ash is a Democratic progressive from Burlington. He's served in the state Senate since 2009 and is currently Senate President Pro Tem. Tim Ash, the job of Lieutenant Governor has only a few specific responsibilities, including presiding over the Senate, being the tiebreaker, and stepping in for the governor when he or she is gone, or if he or she is incapacitated. Beyond that, the Lieutenant Governor gets to choose some priorities unique to the individual in that role to push forward during the two-year term. Why should Vermonters choose you as Lieutenant Governor? What will you be able to bring to the table that none of your competitors can?
Well, thanks, Jane, and thanks everyone for tuning in. I would say that the primary reason that I'm running for office is because I believe, first, that we need experience to help us weather this COVID-19 storm. This is the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, the worst public health scare in modern Vermont history. And I believe I have the experience both inside and outside the statehouse to help Vermont weather that storm. In terms of priorities moving forward, because this is a time to also be thinking about investments moving forward. From my point of view, tackling poverty head on, fighting climate change in ways that save people money, making a big bet on young people who fall through the cracks, thousands of kids each year who need support so we can get the best out of our workforce, starting with the people who already live here, rebuilding our higher education system, which is in disarray, and so many other important priorities. And I believe I'm the candidate with the experience to help us get those things done.
Thanks, Tim Ash. Molly Gray grew up in Newbury, Vermont, and now lives in Burlington. She's an assistant attorney general for the state. Molly Gray, why should Vermonters choose you? What do you bring to the table that's unique?
Thank you, Jane, and thank you to everyone tuning in across Vermont today. I'm a fourth generation Vermonter. I was born and raised in Newbury and actually born in the farmhouse where my folks and family still farms today. I'm a proud product of our education system. I've served Vermont in Washington, working for our Congressman Peter Welch, and I've worked around the globe fighting for human rights. I've also lived and worked across our state in Rutland and Tunbridge and Bethel and South Royalton, and now serve in Montpelier as an assistant attorney general. We are not going to solve our demographic challenges. We're not going to have childcare, paid family leave, broadband, and come out of this crisis stronger if we continue to elect the same leadership. Now is the time for bold Vermont leadership.
Thank you, Molly Gray. Debbie Ingram is a Vermont state senator representing Chittenden County since 2017. She lives in Williston. She's also an ordained minister with the United Church of Christ. Debbie Ingram, why should Vermonters choose you? What is unique about you and your candidacy?
Thanks, Jane, and thanks for everybody for listening. Well, I too bring elected political experience. I think is extremely important. I have municipal experience on the Williston Select Board and the Planning Commission as well. And I think I have the best skill set for this position. Since there aren't that many designated duties, I think the Lieutenant Governor's office is a perfect opportunity to travel across the state and talk to Vermonters, and more importantly, listen to everyday Vermonters about the issues that matter the most. And the issues that I particularly want to focus on are affordable housing and health care, on economic dignity, and on racial injustice. I think that I have the skills and the people personality to be able to draw people out, to listen to what they have to say, and to take their ideas and solutions back to Montpelier.
Thank you very much, Debbie Ingram. Brenda Siegel lives in Newfane and is the founder and director of the Southern Vermont Dance Festival. She ran for governor in 2018. Brenda Siegel, what about you? Why should Vermonters choose you as lieutenant governor?
I was born and raised in Brattleboro, Vermont. I graduated from Brattleboro Union High School. I never imagined myself becoming a low-income single mom, but that is how I've lived my adult life. I have faced many of the challenges that Vermonters all across this state face with lack of opportunity and access to the same kind of privileges that many folks who are successful in the traditional sense have. However, I've turned that adversity into action in ways like going into the legislature and successfully advocating on important legislation that Vermonters care about today, on going into each and every community and helping bring not just those ideas, but bringing those folks themselves so that we can step back from the podium and allow those stories to be heard. It is time to bring the people to the people's house.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the issues facing Vermonters that you will have to deal with as Lieutenant Governor. As all of you well know, the economy is being ravaged by the downturn caused by COVID-19. Agriculture Secretary Anson Tebbit said earlier this week that we've lost 25 dairy farms since the beginning of March. When childcare centers were able to reopen after the shutdown, only half were able to do so, and it's widely believed that many will never open again. Some estimates suggest that 30% or more of the restaurant industry nationally might not survive this crisis. Not to mention the fact that Vermont still has thousands of workers furloughed or laid off. The June unemployment report won't come out for another couple of days yet, but unemployment for Vermont in May was nearly 13%. What would you do? What could you do as Lieutenant Governor to help this situation? Molly Gray?
Now is our moment to align our budget with our greatest needs. A fourth of Vermont in 2020 still does not have access to broadband. One in three children in Newberry, where I grew up, still can't get online. Our teachers are seeing that. Our parents are seeing that. There are strategic investments we can make right now that will not only help us solve our demographic challenges. We are one of the oldest states in the country. And if you're in Windham or Windsor or Orange or the Northeast Kingdom, you know that we have more deaths than births. So now is our moment to think about the leadership that we need to take Vermont forward, to invest in broadband, to invest in childcare, to invest in paid family leave and resilient local food systems that'll make us stronger as we move forward and solve our demographic challenges as we think about a brighter future and more resilient future for Vermont.
Debbie Ingram.
Well, the one thing that we definitely don't need to do is adopt a policy of austerity. I've heard that term bandied about, and that is the absolute worst thing that we can do. We need to make sure that we're not cutting people off at the knees when they're already down and experiencing hard times. And so I think that involves several things. First of all, no matter who wins in November, we need to put pressure on the federal government to adopt another relief and a stimulus package to help the states. We need to look at our reserves. We have a lot of reserves in Vermont, and we need to look at prudent use of those before we make drastic cuts. We need to look at bonding, borrowing for the future before we make cuts. And we need to look at taxing the wealthiest Vermonters who have benefited from the federal tax cuts to make sure that we have the funds to continue to support Vermonters and the programs that they depend on.
Brenda Siegel, what about for you? What would you do, what could you do as Lieutenant Governor to help with the economic problems?
My work for the last 9 years has been a project to rebuild the economy following a crisis. What we need to do is go into each and every community and work with folks on the ground, with town governments and businesses, to ensure that we're coming up with creative economic solutions and drivers, and then help those folks figure out how to get the resources they need, either from Montpelier or the federal government, and how to keep that going on the ground. In addition, I need to mention that we are in a crisis right now, but this is not the beginning of the crisis for so many Vermonters. There's been a racial and economic justice crisis. There has been inequality in so many ways. And it is right now our opportunity to build better out of this crisis and really solve these problems so we are in a new, more stable foundation next time we find ourselves in a pandemic of sorts.
And Tim Ash, same question for you.
Well, one of the blessings and curse of being in a leadership position right now is knowing just how very bad our financial status is. We have a projected $330 million budget hole. So my first priority is getting Vermont back on its economic footing, frankly, the footing we were on as recently as 6 months ago. But in doing so, we do have to make investments for the future. And now is a good time to make significant infrastructure investments, whether it be in housing at all income levels, whether it be in a weatherization bond to save both homeowners and commercial property owners money on energy costs, or whether it's betting big on the future of Vermont with something akin to the Civilian Conservation Corps, but a youth conservation corps styled program where we enlist hundreds, if not thousands, of young people in meaningful work experiences that gets them some money and some skills and rebuilds our workforce.
Conversations and calls for action on systemic racism have gotten louder in recent weeks around the country. Here in Vermont, people of color are at a significantly higher risk of contracting COVID-19. Vermont has one of the highest rates of incarceration for African Americans in the country, and Black Vermonters own their homes at half the rate of the national average for Black Americans. While more than 70% of white Vermonters own their own homes, only about 20% of Black Vermonters do. How would you use the visibility of the Lieutenant Governor's office to address racial disparities in Vermont? Debbie Ingram.
This would be an absolute cornerstone of my tenure as Lieutenant Governor. I stand on solidly on my record already in racial justice. I would compare my record to any elected official or any public person in Vermont. I have supported and championed legislation such as making Indigenous Peoples Day permanent, amending the Constitution to clarify the prohibition against slavery, setting up the Racial Equity Director and panel, championing the ethnic studies bill. And so going forward, we need to continue to expand our race data collection so that we have hard facts about the disparities. We need to look especially at our law enforcement and de-escalate the police use of force. And we need to take the information that we get from the racial equity panel and the ethnic studies task force and put into action the recommendations that they make.
Brenda Siegel.
We need to start by defunding and transitioning resources over to both mental health and other under-resourced services, but also directly into communities who have been harmed by these policies. In order to do that work, we have to work in the communities on the ground and again, be able to step back from the microphone or podium and be able to make sure those stories are the ones that are allowed to come forward. We also need to work inside the legislature to examine each and every policy and ask ourselves who it harms and who it hurts. And I would be a conduit between the legislature and communities and the governor to be able to help bring those stories forth.
Tim Ash.
Well, as an example of the kind of watchdog role I'll play, I'll give an experience I had a year ago when we learned that funds that had been set aside to ensure that all state police would have body cameras, both to protect civilians, but also the troopers themselves, had not been used for that purpose, but instead they were planning on using it to buy AR-15s. I put a stop to that, and it was just the latest example of when the legislature passes legislation, whether it's in law enforcement, criminal justice, or education, to try to eliminate racial disparities, where the people who are responsible for implementing those policies find a way to slow it down, water it down, or flat out ignore it. And that ranges from the top education and to law enforcement officials. So as Lieutenant Governor, you don't write the legislation, but I will be a thorn in the side of any appointed official or elected official who's responsible for implementing these and who delays, denies, or doesn't act at all.
And Molly Gray, how would you use the office to address racial disparities?
I think the first thing we need to do is understand that whether you've been in Vermont for four generations or 4 years, four decades, or 4 days, we are all Vermonters. And we need to embrace a culture in the state that diverse communities are healthy communities. A diverse democracy is a strong democracy. And as we think about racial injustice or economic injustice or social injustice, criminal justice reform, we have to ask ourselves, who's at the table when we have these conversations? Which voices are not, and step back and elevate the voices of those who are most greatly impacted in our communities around the state. That is my commitment as Lieutenant Governor. I'll bring my experience as an Assistant Attorney General and a lifelong advocate for human rights.
This is the VPR Vermont PBS debate series. Today we're hearing from the Democratic candidates for Lieutenant Governor. When we come back, the candidates will have a chance to question one another on their policies and positions. This is the VPR Vermont PBS debate series with the Democratic candidates for Lieutenant Governor. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're hearing from Brenda Siegel, Molly Gray, Tim Ash, and Debbie Ingram. In round two of our debate, the candidates will have a chance to ask questions of one another. You'll each get two rounds. And we'll start with Tim Ash. Tim, who's your question for?
My question's for Molly. Molly, I've served on a city council. You have not. I've been elected by Vermonters to the Senate to use my judgment to advance the best interests of the state. You have not. I've passed into law major legislation regarding racial justice, reproductive rights, minimum wage, land conservation, clean water, mental health, and gun safety. You have not. I've helped lead the state through the worst public health crisis in modern history and the worst economic shock since the Great Depression. You have not. Why do you believe someone with no experience in any of the areas I just described, who has never held elected office, is qualified to be a heartbeat away from the governor's office?
Thank you, Tim. I think this is a moment where we have to recognize if we continue to elect the same leaders, we'll see the same outcomes. A fourth of Vermont still doesn't have access to the internet. And I was talking to students and teachers just on Monday who've been trying to figure out schooling for their kids. It's 2020 and we still don't have internet. We still don't have childcare. We still don't have paid family and medical leave. And you had a bill on your desk last June, I think it was, that you decided not to send to the governor. Vermonters are speaking every day about the leadership in Montpelier. Now's the time for more Vermont, more experienced leadership, and actually working in crisis, as I have, and in serving Vermont across the state to help take us forward.
Tim, do you have any follow-ups?
Well, I would follow up by saying that the Senate under my leadership has passed paid family leave on two occasions, only to be vetoed by the governor. We've made massive increases in investment in childcare and have put forward $20 million for broadband, hoping that communities that have formed communication union districts can come together and extend broadband to the places that the big corporate giants have been unwilling to go to.
And Molly, that wasn't a question, but you can answer if you'd like.
I think Tim's record speaks for itself.
Thank you.
Molly Gray, you actually get to ask the next question. Who's your question for?
I have a question for Debbie. The legislature often takes criticism for a lack of action, and I know you can't decide which bill comes to the Senate or goes on to the House or to the governor, but you and I agree that making higher education a priority in Vermont is at the very top, and it's critical to workforce development. Would you agree that the lack of funding and strategy for state colleges is a failure of Senate leadership?
Well, I do agree that we were given messages for many years. I've served on the Senate Education Committee for 4 years, and every year we were told that there wasn't enough funding. And also just the data of comparing Vermont to other states speaks for itself. We're 48th or 49th, I think, in the amount of money that we spend. I don't think it's just on the Senate, though. I think it's, the legislature as a whole was not making the investments that we needed to in the budget. But, when you actually get into the day-to-day work of trying to grapple with the budget, you find that, if you're going to give money to something else, that frequently means you have to take it away from somewhere else. So those are very tough decisions to be made. And I'm glad that we're focusing on adequately funding our state colleges now.
Molly, a follow-up?
No.
I like the way this is going. It's sort of round robin, tossing the baton right to the person whose question is next. Debbie Ingram, you get the next question to toss to one of your competitors.
Okay, great. So this is actually for Molly. Given that you moved to Switzerland to live and work for 15 months in 2017 and 2018, how is it that you think you are not in violation of the Vermont constitutional provision that requires candidates for lieutenant governor and governor must be residents of Vermont for the 4 years preceding the election?
Thank you, Debbie. And I know this issue's gotten a bit of attention. I'm both eligible and I'm qualified. As I said earlier, I was born on a farm in Vermont. I'm a fourth generation Vermonter. I went to middle school, elementary school, high school, college, law school in Vermont. I lived and worked across our state, and I have maintained my residency since 2011 when I moved back home to Vermont to serve our state. I think Vermonters in this moment want to talk about how my experience and my qualifications will lead us through this crisis. And I've worked in crisis and I've worked to promote human rights and how I will continue to serve Vermont as I have and fight for the needs and rights of Vermonters every single day.
Debbie Ingram, a follow-up for Molly?
Well, yeah, I don't. I mean, I appreciate the work that you that you did, and the love that you have for Vermont, Molly. But I don't think really addressed the question. I mean, I lived as an expat myself, as you know, in Bangladesh from 1995 to 2002, and I know that I had a resident visa in Bangladesh. I reported to the IRS in the United States that I was a bona fide resident of another country. So to me, I would imagine that you probably went through the same kind of things. And that would say to me that you were definitely a resident of another country at a time when the Constitution says you should have been a resident of Vermont.
Let's let Molly respond. Molly Gray?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about our National Guard. Those who have studied overseas or worked overseas temporarily, we don't take away our National Guard citizenship as Vermonters. We don't take away someone's residency just because they've spent time serving human rights or serving our state overseas. I wouldn't be running if I wasn't eligible.
And Brenda Siegel, your question.
The question is for Tim. Tim, the path that you took to be sitting here today is a path that is not accessible to most Vermonters. Do you believe that marginalized people should be able to run and win higher office, or do you believe that those barriers should determine that marginalized people are not allowed to lead?
Well, thank you, Brenda. Obviously, every person who is a qualified person who has the ability to get the job done should be considered and should feel very free to run for any office and be able to serve, whether it's at the local or state level. I come from a family of fairly modest means. My mother was a school teacher. My father was a probation officer for more than 40 years. Everything that I have achieved, both professionally and politically, I've had to earn it myself. I don't have family connections and connections to rich donors and people like that. Prior to being in elected office myself, I actively recruited people of color to run for office at the local and state level. I actively recruited women to run for local and state office. I did those things when no one was watching and it wasn't part of the media zeitgeist. So I absolutely believe everyone who is capable should be encouraged to run for office.
Brenda Siegel, any follow-up for Tim Ash?
Sure. And as I said, that a lot of those offices that you encourage people to run for are not actually accessible to families like mine. And so what I'm wondering is, how long do Black and Brown, Indigenous people, single moms, people in poverty, and other marginalized communities have to wait for the experience that they do have access to be counted?
Well, Brenda, I've dedicated my entire adult life to helping lift people out of poverty and meet basic human needs. So I absolutely agree with you that there are people who, for the dumb luck of the parent lottery, find themselves behind the eight ball from the get-go. That's one of the reasons why fighting poverty, which seems rather old-fashioned, is one of the things I plan to dedicate myself most to as Lieutenant Governor, and which I've dedicated myself to in my role as a senator.
Today's debate is among the Lieutenant Governor candidates, the Democratic candidates for Lieutenant Governor here on VPR and Vermont PBS. The candidates are asking one another questions now, and this is round two of your time to ask each other questions. Molly Gray, you have a second question. Who's it for?
My question's for Tim. Tim, you twice voted against strengthening vaccine requirements for Vermont's children. You suggested increased requirements would, quote, not have an impact. In light of this global pandemic and the need for a COVID-19 vaccination to protect our children and allow our businesses to reopen, has your position changed?
Well, that's a funny question to be asking, Molly. I'm sure the consultants who encouraged you to do so didn't quite do their homework. My position, which I articulated and was well established in the media then, which is why I've not been criticized one single time prior to this question, has been that I believe that all children should be vaccinated. And my objection to the way the law existed at the time was it made an artificial distinction between religious exemptions and philosophical exemptions, which I believed meant that some who did not practice a particular denomination were being treated differently than those who happened to be part of a religious group. So I believe all kids should be required to have vaccinations. And that has always been my position.
A follow-up?
Just to be clear, and I guess as an attorney, we want to make sure that we don't parse our words. So you would entirely support the requirement that all children in Vermont receive vaccinations?
Yes, and the only, as has been my position well articulated from the day I walked into the Senate, The only exemption I would make is for medical exemptions, which I do not believe there is any debate about whether children who have a justifiable medical reason for an exemption should, of course, be permitted to have that.
Debbie Ingram, your second question.
Thanks. This is for Tim. Tim, a lot of people in different parts of the state will say that those of us in Chittenden County have too much influence. How would you respond to that? And if you think that's true, what can we do to make sure that the whole rest of the state is treated equitably?
Well, I have heard that myself as well. And I think obviously Chittenden County has certain assets like the state's flagship university, the airport, which lend itself to certain economic activity just by fortune of having those assets present. I will tell you that one of the things I have done, which I took some heat for, was actually breaking up the Chittenden Senate District. I have been an advocate for breaking up the Chittenden Senate District over the years, even though the only people it would disadvantage are incumbent members of the Senate like myself. We have broken it up so that in the 2022 election, there will no longer be a 6-seat Chittenden Senate District. Also, under my leadership, the Senate has emphasized very strongly a move for rural economic development and pushing resources to communities who historically were not getting them from governors and economic development programs. That'll continue to be an emphasis. It's a 14-county economic development strategy where we build on the resources in each region of the state. It's what I've been doing as Senate President. I'll keep doing it as Lieutenant Governor.
A follow-up, Debbie Ingram?
No, that's okay. Thank you.
Brenda Siegel, your second question.
My question is for Molly. I've heard you say recently that you would not be running were we not stalled on paid family and medical leave and livable wage and so many other issues. I myself have sacrificed, as have my other opponents, and had those tough conversations, been inside the legislature, fighting for those issues, standing at press conferences, writing op-eds for years and years now to do that exact work. We have effectively moved that legislation being stopped both at the governor's office and a veto-proof majority. In order to change that, we need voices on the ground. Where were you when we were doing that work?
I've dedicated my life to fighting for human rights across Vermont and also across the world. I've served our state working for our Congressman Peter Welch, working for the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. It's one of the highest courts below the Supreme Court, living in Rutland, living in Tunbridge, living in South Royalton. I've also worked as an assistant attorney general across our state to bring my human rights background into our attorney general's office. And I want to talk about paid family and medical leave. Last year, I had used up all my vacation days and sick days caring for a mother who was in the hospital. And I was at the point where I was going to have to choose between leaving my job potentially and to care for my mother or stay in my job and hope for the best. No family in 2020 should have to choose between caring for family and paying the bills. And when I talk about paid family leave, that's what I'm talking about.
Brenda Siegel, would you care to follow up?
I really appreciate all the work that you have done. However, none of that work has been fighting for livable wage and paid family medical leave before you yourself needed it. And there are families like mine that all across the state have been struggling for so many years just to feed our families. And what I'm wondering is, where was your voice lifting us up when we needed that?
I'm committed to serving Vermont. As a fourth generation Vermonter who grew up on a vegetable and dairy farm in a part of one of the poorest parts of our state, Orange County. A fourth of Vermont, including a third of children in Newberry, still don't have access to the internet, and it's 2020. As Lieutenant Governor, I hope to elevate voices like yours, Brenda, and elevate the voices of Vermonters across the state who continue to feel like Montpelier is out of touch with Vermont. I'm fighting for our rural communities, for our working families, and caring for the land and environment as someone who grew up on a vegetable and dairy farm in our state.
And Tim Ash, the final question is yours to throw to somebody else.
I'll ask my question of Molly. And Molly, I'll leave aside the issue of the fact that if paid leave is your top priority, unelecting one member of the House so that we can actually override the governor's veto would probably be the best thing to do. But can you name a single bill that I've voted for that you would have voted against?
A single bill that you voted for that I voted against?
That you would have voted against if you were in my position.
I think the moment that we need to address now is what do we do on issues like broadband and paid family and medical leave and childcare and climate and food security. I'm not going to analyze every single bill that you've voted for or against or brought to the floor or not brought to the floor. What I know from talking to Vermonters across the state is that they feel that the legislature has left them behind and that we've continued to put politics before people. We failed to bring the voices of Vermonters to the table. And now is a moment where we need bold, experienced leadership that is fresh and different to help face our greatest challenges.
Tim Ash?
Well, I guess I would differ in the fact that I believe that the 180 people serving in Montpelier all go there with the specific intent of improving people's lives, and in difficult times of resource constraints have been making great progress in many regards. But I guess I would like to return to the question. You've talked about the need for new leaders. Please tell me one bill that I voted for that you would have voted against.
Tim, I'm not going to play political games, but I'm going to continue to talk about what Vermonters are telling me every single day. And I'm running because of your failed record on paid family leave. I'm running because Vermonters still don't have childcare. I'm running because the 4th of Vermont still can't get online. I'm running because there's been 500,000 meals ready to eat distributed to food insecure Vermonters. That's why I'm running. And I will continue to serve Vermont as I have throughout my career. And I will continue to fight for the rights of Vermonters as our next Lieutenant Governor.
As you know, I've developed a veto-proof majority in the Senate for paid family leave. I'm just wondering why you didn't choose to run for the House for your first elected office, where flipping one vote would have the effect of making it possible to pass over the governor's veto.
Jane, may I have a moment to answer that question?
Sure.
You know, throughout this election, people have asked, Molly, why don't you run for city council? Or why don't you run for the legislature? Those are questions that men ask women running for office. No one's asked Senator Leahy, a 32-year-old prosecutor who was elected by Vermonters, to go to Washington and serve our state, whether he had the experience. I've lived and worked across our state. I've served as an assistant attorney general, working with communities statewide. The issues of paid family leave and childcare, those aren't issues of the city council in Burlington. Those are statewide issues. And that's why I'm running for Lieutenant Governor, because we're going to put Vermonters, our families, and our communities, and our future at the forefront.
Well, that concludes the second round of our debate today. When we come back, the candidates will tackle questions posed by our listeners and viewers. This is the Democratic Lieutenant Governor's debate on VPR and Vermont PBS. Welcome back to the VPR Vermont PBS debate among the Democratic candidates for Lieutenant Governor. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're hearing from Debbie Ingram, Molly Gray, Brenda Siegel, and Tim Ash. Before the debate, we asked listeners and viewers what questions they would like the candidates to answer. And in this round, you'll each have 45 seconds to respond to the questions posed by Vermonters. Here's one from David in Greensboro. Would you support a bill that required an affirmative vote of the townspeople where an elementary school is located before a town's elementary school grades could be reconfigured or before that school could be closed? So would you like the townspeople to have to vote on school changes and especially school closures? Debbie Ingram, you're first.
Well, I've served on the Education Committee for the 4 years that I've been in the Senate, and I mean, essentially, that is what towns do. I mean, they have a lot of input into what goes on with their schools, even with Act 46, which I know hasn't worked out as well in some parts of the state as it has in others. There's been a lot of that was an attempt to make sure that there was local input and make sure that the townspeople are actually deciding what happens to their own schools. So yes, I do support that kind of local control of schools, and I think that our school system is extremely high quality and is really excellent, and a lot of that is because Vermonters really support their schools.
Brenda Siegel, same question.
I do support that. Act 46, around near where I live, did not turn out very well. And since some places property taxes went up quite high. And that's true also in the Northeast Kingdom and other areas as well. We do not have equitable schools. While some of our school systems are very strong and the top five in the country and carry the weight for others, other school systems are leaving people of color and folks who are low income behind. We do not, our children do not have all have broadband access, so they cannot do their homework. And our teachers are not able to teach, especially throughout this pandemic. So we need to implement the ethnic studies standard, and we need to have broadband accessibility throughout the school system. And yes, we need to have local control so that our budgets can be voted up and not down. We have seen the disaster of Act 46, and we do need to do some work to improve it.
Tim Ash, your perspective on people in a town having to have an affirmative vote to close a school or to significantly reconfigure it.
Well, first off, let me say that I absolutely supported reducing the amount of bureaucracy to have a more efficient governing model for our state's public education system. In terms of individual schools being able to make decisions like the ones the questioner poses, I believe within the particular governance structure, those are exactly the kind of decisions that should be made locally. I want to say, as Lieutenant Governor, one of the areas I'll be emphasizing is trying to find other ways to bring resources to support schools for all of those expenses that are distant cousins of straight education. Whether it's reading, writing, teaching math, science, that used to be what was in school budgets. Now it is increasingly that budget growth is being driven by meeting human service needs, mental health, counseling, nutrition. And finding other ways to pay for those elements will reduce pressure on property taxes. And that's an area of emphasis for me.
And Molly Gray.
Our teachers are our most essential workers, and our schools are, I think, our most essential places. Newberry Elementary School, where I went, is still in our town green. It's next to the fire department and village store. It's where the community convenes. I strongly support local governance for local problems. We have town meetings and a very strong tradition of direct democracy in our state. I think we need to empower our rural communities, and that includes giving them the support that they need to ensure their communities can thrive, their schools can thrive, and they have our every support in being able to do that.
Let's move from elementary education to higher education. Joanne and Johnson writes, for the entire 23 years that I worked for the Vermont State College System, Vermont was at the bottom or second from the bottom in state support for the Vermont State Colleges. Because of the poor support from the state, the VSC tuition and fees for in-state students are the highest in the US for public four-year institutions. Our students are often forced to drop out because of the financial burden or else graduate with an overwhelming amount of debt. The VSC system currently receives about 17% of its annual revenue from the state of Vermont. This is shameful. What is your plan to help the Vermont State College system survive now and in the future? Brenda Siegel?
We need to stop talking about education separately, pre-K, K through 12, and then higher ed. We need to begin to talk about fully funding our education system cradle to grave. That includes working with our higher ed fund. That includes increasing revenue across the state. And that includes creating a free tuition system for our state colleges. It is not okay for any student to not be able to go to college based on their income alone. My son will be attending UVM in the fall, and we're very grateful that we're able to make that opportunity work, but it is going to be a huge stretch for our family's income. If we want to make this change, then we have to begin to talk about education as crucial and important from cradle to grave and be committed to fully funding and bringing the revenue sources to do so.
Tim Ash, your plan for fully funding the Vermont State College system.
Well, first off, as someone who's taught courses in the state college system, I fully appreciate how important the system is in terms of access to higher education, particularly people in the northern half of the state. You know, just briefly, the state of leadership of the state college system has really been in disarray. The chancellor came to the legislature several years ago and said, if we just get $4 million more a year, the system will be sustainable and we won't come back again asking for money. Well, we know that that was not quite accurate. I was glad to join with the speaker to block then Chancellor Spalding's proposal to immediately close three campuses without any discussion with the local campuses. We had pledged to create a bridge year for us to evaluate how to reinvigorate the campuses moving forward. We did just that by putting more than $30 million on the table. And we have hard work to do with the local communities to come up with realistic, sustainable plans for each of the campuses.
Molly Gray.
This is another example where if we elect the same leaders, we'll see the same outcomes. We basically let our state colleges fail, not only because of a lack of funding, but because of a lack of leadership and a lack of strategy. If we're going to solve our demographic challenges here in Vermont, and if we're going to help build a stronger economy, we have to address the greatest challenge, one of the greatest challenges of our time, which is we have failed to build a pipeline from classroom to community. Right now, we have the highest graduation rate in the country, yet only 41% of our Vermont graduates go on to any higher education. My mom went to VTC. My uncles are NVU graduates. This is a moment where we need leaders who are going to work with our state colleges and our workforce to address our workforce needs and invest truly in our state colleges and see that as vital for the future.
And Debbie Ingram.
We do need to invest more in our state colleges, and I supported the bridge funding that the legislature appropriated to give us time to come up with innovative ideas about how to make our state college system work better. There will be all kinds of ideas on the table, including having certain campuses dedicated to particular topics or disciplines, more remote learning. In Senate Education, we were looking at tuition-free packages that had to be used in state. There are a variety of things that we need to consider, and the legislature was galvanized when the chancellor drops the nuclear option on us. So I expect that we will definitely have some innovative ideas to save the state college system moving forward.
I want to make sure we save enough time for each of you to have a closing statement, a closing answer. So let's do a few lightning round questions. And I'll just briefly summarize a listener question that we got and ask you to address it very quickly. What's the one thing you think you could do in the next few years as we face economic crisis to address climate change? Debbie Ingram.
My climate change priorities are around weatherization and building efficiency, around renewable energy, and addressing transportation.
Brenda Siegel.
Transportation and building a Renew New England or a Green Mountain New Deal.
Tim Ash.
A substantial weatherization bond, participating in the Transportation Climate Initiative, and making Vermont's next big renewable energy bet into storage of renewable power.
And Molly Gray.
Making climate change, jobs and climate change possible for all Vermonters, including workforce development, investing in solar and renewable energy, and fuel-efficient vehicles.
Do you support a state mandate on wearing masks in public spaces? Brenda Siegel?
Yes, absolutely. We cannot say that our workers need to wear masks to keep people safe, but our people do not need to wear masks to keep workers safe.
Tim Ash?
Yes, and we've come way too far and sacrificed too much to let the small inconvenience of wearing a mask set all of that back.
Molly Gray?
I trust the scientists, the medical professionals, and will say that we're all on the same team as Vermonters, and I've seen people wearing their masks, and I think we need to encourage and promote that as much as possible.
Debbie Ingram.
I've changed my mind on this recently. I didn't favor a mandate, but I've been listening to people on the ground, and I really, now I do think that a mandate would be very helpful. Yes.
And final lightning round here, just very quickly, do you think Vermont schools should open for in-person instruction in the fall? Tim Ash?
Absolutely, if it can be done safely. And I've called on the Secretary of Education to create a task force that's inclusive so that people have confidence that we can open safely. And so far, he has not taken me up on that suggestion, but hopefully he'll see the light.
Molly Gray.
Well, I agree that that's the ideal situation. We have to be prepared for online learning, which is why the lack of investment and failed leadership on broadband is such a tremendous issue for our state.
Debbie Ingram.
I would like to. It scares me, and I do also agree with a task force would be much better to help make those decisions.
And Brenda Siegel.
Currently, our teachers and schools have not been heard on their concerns about our school system opening. And while I'd love it to be possible, and I homeschooled my son in the spring, I want to say that we can't do that until unless it is safe and possible, and we need to bring our teachers and our teachers' union to the table in order to do that.
We just have barely enough time for one final question to wrap up the debate, and I'd like you to each spend a minute answering this question, but no more than a minute. If you were writing your own obituary, which we hope you won't have to do for a very long time, what would you want it to say about your time as Lieutenant Governor? What do you hope your greatest achievement or legacy in this role would be? Debbie Ingram?
I would like for folks to remember that I brought people together during this very, very difficult time, that I, by my example and dealing with my own life experiences, my own challenges, helped them to get through both the pandemic and the racial injustice that we've seen in this country. I would like for Vermonters to remember that I moved the discussion and the action around racial justice forward. And I'd like for Vermonters to see that I had focused on the issues that they felt were most important, and that I had listened to them and valued their opinion and brought their opinions and their solutions back to Montpelier.
Brenda Siegel.
I would love to make sure that we remember that we worked in partnership together to build a path forward for marginalized and forgotten voices to have a seat at the table with equal voice and equal power. I would like the mom who is alone with a baby at 25 years old and has taken on her own type of leadership and built leadership within her community to remember that she could face adversity and turn it into action, and that her voice does matter. I would like to make sure that we know that the most powerful change is possible when we work together to build a brighter future, and that when we work on bold climate action, building a bottom-up economy, healing the overdose crisis, and supporting and strengthening our education system, that it must be encapsulated in an overarching framework. I would like us to remember that a teacher, a movement builder, a small business owner, and a low-income single mom can lead in our state.
Tim Ash, what would you want your legacy to be?
Well, I think first and foremost, I would want people to say that working in tandem with whoever the governor is and the legislature, that I had helped Vermont get through the worst crisis it's faced in modern history. I'd also like for people to see that we've made substantial progress on the areas I'm most passionate about, fighting poverty, which is at the foundation of all of the other challenges Vermont faces, addressing our housing challenges for housing affordability at all income levels, attacking the issue of affordability in higher education and childcare. I want people to look back and say we made progress on all those things. I know that no one person solves any of these things alone, but I also know that it takes experience and know-how to get things done. I have helped lead Vermont through this terrible crisis the last 4 months, working with the governor and the speaker. I believe I've provided steady leadership. On the Senate president's side, I have also helped lead passage of one of the most progressive agendas in America the last 4 years. And I hope people will say that I advanced the general interests of the state, and I did it with integrity.
And Molly Gray.
We're an incredible moment, and I'd want Vermonters to feel incredibly proud of electing someone who has a lifelong commitment to Vermont and to fighting for human rights, who's going to put our communities, our families, and our people in this moment before politics. We are potentially facing the greatest crisis in a century. And it's been almost a century since we've had a global pandemic. We are in an unprecedented moment, and we have the opportunity to rethink everything anew. Childcare, how we care for our older Vermonters, food security, agriculture, climate. We have a moment to build the Vermont that we want for our future, a Vermont that's diverse, that's bold, that's inclusive, that's a laboratory for our nation on progressive reforms and policies, that we've innovated, that we're entrepreneurial, that we've elevated our small businesses and our downtowns. That's the Vermont that I know, that's the Vermont that I want, and that's the Vermont that I want Vermonters to remember me by.
Well, that concludes our VPR Vermont PBS Democratic Lieutenant Governor debate. Tim Ash, Molly Gray, Debbie Ingram, and Brenda Siegel, thanks very much to all four of you for participating today. I very much appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
You can listen to a replay of this debate in the Vermont Edition rebroadcast slot on VPR tonight at 7, or you can watch it online on Vermont PBS at 8 p.m. or on broadcast at 8 p.m. You can find our entire debate schedule at vpr.org or vermontpbs.org. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for joining us.